Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday, February 18th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And let me just announce at the beginning that we are only going to be hearing two bills today due to some scheduling issues. We will be hearing Senate Bill 1577. We'll also be hearing House Bill 4009. If you're here for anything else, those bills will be carried over to next week. So Okay, so we'll start out by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 1577. And Erin, could you tell us about this bill?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1577 establishes the Legislative Committee on Accountability as joint legislative committee of the Legislative Assembly. This measure comes due, no revenue impact. This measure may have a fiscal impact as it does have a subsequent referral of the Ways and Means. We do not have that impact yet, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And I see Senator Johnson is here. Would you like to come forward? And we have one other person signed up on the bill. If you'd like him. Okay, sure. So we'll call both of you together. Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Johnson, Senate District 16, and the committee staff did a good job of summarizing a very simple bill. This bill is a proposal for a legislative committee on accountability, established in statute so it is not subject to the vicissitudes of change of leadership, and dedicated to watchdogging how agencies are performing. The committee would be comprised of equal numbers of Democrat and Republican legislators. Most importantly, it would have the ability to decide which state programs to examine. This bill is meant as no criticism to the Secretary of State, but the Secretary of State is a partisan office that currently handles audits. It seems to me to be much more appropriate that a bipartisan legislature, the people's branch of government, should be able to make its own policy decisions about what audits to undertake. Of course, those decisions are often based on legislators' perception of the facts. If agencies are not forthright in their presentation of the facts, legislative decision-making can be flawed. This proposal would allow the legislature to take up its long overdue responsibility of agency oversight and better assure that decision-makers have full knowledge of the facts before they render policy decisions. Only a couple of years ago, our citizens suffered the costly failure of Cover Oregon. A number of my legislative colleagues felt that we had been deceived about where money was being spent and how the project was progressing. After this past 2015 legislative session, when similar questions were raised about other programs, Oregonians are right to question whether lawmakers are learning anything. We can't keep making the same mistakes. The legislature needs to exercise our power to ensure that state agencies are providing the services that they're paid to provide. We cannot continue to sit helplessly in hearing rooms trying to read between the lines of testimony that may be incomplete or at worst not truthful. I commend Senate Bill 1577 to your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John DiLorenzo. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Davis Wright Tremaine, but I am here today in my own capacity as a citizen in support of Senate Bill 1577. I'd like to start by applauding Senator Johnson for bringing this concept forward. As you all know, our Constitution creates three coordinate branches of government, which are designed in part to provide checks and balances upon one another. And although three branches are equal in theory, in the words of George Orwell, some branches are more equal than others. It is my view that due to the nature of the citizen legislature, the executive branch will often predominate over the legislative branch for a number of reasons. First of all, personnel and the executive branch often outlast those personnel in the legislature. Secondly, the executive functions 24/7. The legislative branch does not. And third, although the Ways and Means Committee and the Legislative Fiscal Office can subject agency fiscal statements to a straight face test, you frankly lack the staff to look much beyond the numbers quite often. With control over the numbers, with control over the assumptions, the executive can often have an inordinate impact on your decision-making process. The committee would be akin to the type of investigative committees that exist in Congress, but with one exception. That is that the committees would be bipartisan. All decisions and reports would require a majority vote of the committee to ensure that it did not pursue matters based on partisanship. The legislation would authorize the committee to carry on its work during legislative sessions and the interim between sessions. It would direct it to work with the Secretary of State's Audit Division where appropriate. And it would also authorize the committee, when it deemed appropriate, to either refer matters for civil prosecution to the Attorney General, refer matters for criminal prosecution to the Attorney General or to district attorneys, and to also introduce as committee bills proposed legislation to address wasteful practices, because the solutions would necessarily be bipartisan in nature. I believe that whatever emerged from that committee would likely have an excellent chance of passage. But most importantly, the Statutory Committee on Accountability would allow the legislative branch to exercise its oversight obligations and to level the playing field between the executive and the legislative branches. We believe this concept really merits your discussion and consideration, and I, for one, support it wholeheartedly, having witnessed this process for over 25 years, and commend it to you for your consideration.
Okay, well, thank you both for your testimony. Do we have any questions for Senator Johnson or Mr. DiLorenzo? Okay, it looks like you've answered them all.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you both for your testimony. And I don't see anybody else signed up to testify on Senate Bill 1577, so we'll close the public hearing on SB 1577 and open a public hearing on House Bill 4009.
Erin? Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4009 designates March 28th of each year as Minoru Yasui Day. This measure comes to you from the House with 56 aye votes. There were 4 members excused on the floor that day, and no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Okay, thank you, Erin. And we have quite a few people signed up to testify. I did want to acknowledge that Senator Chuck Thompson is with us in the room. In the interest of time, I think he's going to just be here for support and listen to the testimony, and you obviously would be welcome to join us at the dais at any time. So we'll begin by calling Kimberly McCullough, Darren Nakata, and Peggy Nagay, if the three of you would like to come forward. Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm the legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. I will keep my comments very short today in the interest of time, but I do have a few things that I'd like to note briefly. First, I want to bring your attention to a long list of endorsements. It's been posted on OLIS, and it is from a very diverse group of organizations that have endorsed this bill. And that diversity is truly a reflection of Minoru Yasui's work and his impact on a very wide range of communities, which continues to this day. We've also submitted to OLIS a long list of names of individuals who support this bill. Nearly 1,400 people signed an online petition supporting the bills. Their names have been submitted, and most of those folks are from Oregon. You're going to hear from the rest of the speakers about why on this year, which is the 100th anniversary of Minoru Yasui's birth, it's so important that we honor his legacy. But I also wanted to note that being part of the process of working on this bill has been incredibly meaningful and inspiring for me on a personal level. The more I learn about Minoru Yasui, the more I'm inspired by his bravery and values and willingness to stand up for justice and equality. When I first began work as a civil rights advocate, a mentor told me that when I'm feeling tired and worn down and discouraged, I should look back on the civil rights leaders that came before, that I should feel their wind on my back pushing me forward and guiding me to do the right thing. And I feel that now. I feel his inspiration pushing me forward. And I know that by creating Minoru Yasui Day in Oregon, so many more people will learn about him and about his legacy and feel his wind at their backs. Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Burdick, who is my senator, and Senator Farioli, thank you so much for this opportunity. My name is Darren Nakata. As an attorney with Perkins Coie and as an American whose family lost everything as a result of World War II, I'm moved by Min's unwavering and lifelong fight for equality and civil justice. He graduated from the University of Oregon, participating in ROTC while an undergraduate and earning the rank of second lieutenant. He was the first Japanese American to graduate from the U of O Law School and the first Japanese American to be admitted to the Oregon State Bar. But he was unable to find employment practicing law in Portland and eventually took a position in Chicago. The day after Pearl Harbor was bombed, he quit that position and returned home to Oregon in order to enlist in the U.S. Army. And he was rejected. He tried 8 more times. Having been rejected 9 times, Min decided to open a law office. It was a tiny little office in the lobby of a small hotel in Old Japantown. It was a time of great panic in Japantown. Many people needed legal advice and help with making arrangements for whatever was to come. My grandfather was one of those people. Almost all of Min's long hours were pro bono. Clients paid whatever they could, and many paid nothing at all. One of the restrictions put in place during the months after Pearl Harbor was a curfew on all persons of Japanese ancestry. Min intentionally defied this curfew in order to test its constitutionality, taking a lonely 3-hour walk through the streets of Portland before finally turning himself in at the downtown precinct. He spent 9 months in solitary confinement, was convicted of violating this curfew, appealed his conviction all the way to the Supreme Court, and lost again. Ultimately, he joined thousands of others, including my grandfather, at the Minidoka internment camp. My grandfather, Jichon, was friends with Min Yasui. After immigrating to Portland from Japan, Jichon worked tirelessly, first for the railroad, saving every penny, and using that money to take over a small hotel on Northwest 2nd and Cooch, just a few blocks east of where I now work. Eventually, he also owned 2 markets for fruits and vegetables in North Portland. World War II destroyed him financially. Same as with the other 120,000 Japanese Americans, the government took everything from my grandfather. 3 businesses, his home, all of his family's personal possessions, everything that he'd worked for 25 years to build. In 1945, at the end of World War II, Jichon was given $25 and a train ticket back to Portland. Jichon struggled in those early years after the war, but eventually found work. He took public transportation, transferring 2 times each way on the bus, to the McBrien restaurant, where he peeled and mashed potatoes every day, all day, just a few blocks from where he used to have his hotel. And to my grandfather's last day, he never liked eating mashed potatoes. Despite having been stripped of all of his property and civil liberties, Jichon told me that one of the proudest moments in his life came in 1952. For the first time in our nation's history, foreign-born Japanese Americans like my grandfather were allowed to become naturalized U.S. citizens, which almost unbelievably was impossible until then. Min Yasui worked extremely hard to get this important legislation passed. My family has a black and white photograph of my grandparents proudly standing along with 70 other Japanese at the Multnomah County Courthouse as part of the very first class of Japanese taking the oath of citizenship. After everything, they became U.S. citizens at the first opportunity they were given, and after winning citizenship, they voted in every single election for the rest of their lives. I wanted to share this short story not because I think my grandparents are any more special than your grandparents, or any more special than the grandparents of any Japanese American. I wanted to tell you the story because they are emblematic of everything Min Yasui struggled for, the people he championed and advocated for courageously and heroically throughout his life. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Peggy Nagai. I'm a Sansei, a third generation Japanese American, raised in Boring, Oregon, on a farm. We grew up poor without indoor plumbing because my parents really had to start all over again after the war. Little did I realize until years later that the Yasui family had actually helped my father's family purchase that land, and that my father, I didn't know this, but he also was arrested for curfew violation. because before they could, he was trying to get the farm leased before they left, because if they didn't and they couldn't pay the mortgage, the land would be foreclosed even when they were incarcerated. So Minya Sui helped my father get out of jail. So there's a lot of ties between our two families that I didn't realize. I grew up in the 60s with Vietnam, with the Asian American student movement, with the feminist movement, but little did I realize that Minya Sui had grown up just miles away from Sandy, Oregon, where I went to high school. I didn't realize that he was a civil rights leader. I didn't know that after the war, he went to Denver and helped found the Metropolitan Urban League of Denver, that he helped found a Latino leadership organization, a Native American organization. I didn't realize that in my midst and in my almost my neighborhood, that there was a civil rights leader from Oregon like Minoru Yasui. I didn't realize that he really was the voice for marginalized people, underrepresented people, and that he built bridges across communities at a time when really racial discrimination was still legal. I did know that in the 70s, as chair of the Japanese American Citizens League Redress Committee, that he advocated for redress for Japanese Americans who had been incarcerated during World War II. And that during that same period of time, there were researchers who discovered in the National Archives evidence that the government during World War II and during his World War II case, the government had suppressed evidence that said that the incarceration of Japanese Americans was not based on military necessity as claimed by the government, but was really based on race. So in the early 80s, I, as his lead attorney, and other attorneys filed Coram Nobis petitions for Fred Korematsu, for Gordon Hirabayashi, and for Minya Sui. So in Oregon, we filed in the Federal District Court of Oregon, and we had a hearing before Judge Baloney. And in that hearing, these significant charges of governmental misconduct and fraud upon the court were not heard. Judge Baloney instead thought that those were dead issues. He did grant the government's motion and dismissed our petition. He vacated Yasui's conviction, but he did not have the evidentiary hearing that we wanted to have so that people could get educated about those records where it was found that the Japanese Americans did not and were not a military threat. Over the decades, little did I realize when I started this case in 1982 that we would be here over the decades filing amicus briefs on cases such as Muslim surveillance. So we've done that over the decades throughout 9/11 and afterwards. And we did not feel that Yasui received his day in court. So in 2013, Holly Yasui, Min's daughter, and myself founded the Minoru Yasui Tribute Committee. We did that because we knew the centennial of his birth was coming up, and we wanted to do something to recognize his contribution as a civil rights leader and as a community advocate and as a Japanese-American hero. The first thing we undertook was the Presidential Medal of Freedom. We enlisted over 100 organizations and individuals in that effort to nominate him for the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's the nation's highest civilian honor. And we were thrilled and very surprised in some ways that he received that honor, but not without the support of people like Senator Wyden and Merkley and representatives from the state of Oregon, and especially Senator Mazie Hirono, who forwarded that nomination. We were successful. At the time, we did not realize that Yasui was the one and only Oregonian to receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That is significant. This, to me, is even more significant because I'm an Oregonian and because I grew up here, and I really think it's important for students and next generations to learn about our hometown hero, Minoru Yasui. So really appreciate the work that you have done to recess the Senate, to have this hearing, to do the work that you're doing this year in his centennial year. We want to have that march on. We want to have the march on March 28th with this legislation in hand, mm-hmm. with this statute, really to celebrate somebody's ability to step forward for justice. We're also going to have a symposium. I invite you to that on April 23rd. We are working on a film and other pieces. But this legislation really is the foundation of our work. And we must, you know, in the spirit of Minor Yasui, we must live our lives to promote justice. So this bill is important, the statute important, and what's more important is every year we will have the opportunity for students and other citizens in Oregon to think about what he did and to know that we need to be ever vigilant for justice. And as Ted Kennedy once said, the work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die. So thank you for allowing Minoru Yasui's dream to continue on. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for your testimony and for bringing his memory alive for us today in this room. Any questions?
Comments, Madam Chair? No
yes,
questions.
Yes, Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had the pleasure of representing Hood River County. Now that pleasure belongs to my colleague from District, was it 28, I believe?
26.
I also represent today the community of Ontario. Uh-huh. And the contributions of Issei, Nisei, and Sansei are evident everywhere in the community. And when you learn the history of people who literally were forced to relocate under deep suspicion and just simply lost everything, had virtually nothing to return to wherever they came from on the West Coast, but who had in that time come to love Eastern Oregon and put deep roots into the community and build all of the things that now have resulted in ownership of businesses, lands, professional services. The generations have flourished based on simply the will to be Americans, to be successful. That is a powerful commentary on the regenerative nature of people and you know what folks can do when they really are dedicated to that justice, to finding justice and to building justice and to living in just communities. What I love about this is that in honoring Minoru Yasui, we're pointing out a very stark contrast and remembering a day when people understood a different definition of civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. There was every expectation that Mr. Yasui would be arrested and prosecuted. There was no expectation that he would not be arrested and prosecuted. In fact, the intention was to be arrested and prosecuted in order to put the law on trial. And I'm pretty certain that his initial expectations were violated. He didn't think that he would be incarcerated, certainly not in solitary confinement, and certainly not after appeal, and certainly not after appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. So that's a tribute to unwavering belief in the eventual emergence of justice. It's also fascinating to me that the lessons of civil disobedience, where people expect to violate the law and expect to be prosecuted and possibly even convicted in order to put the law on trial, we see people trying to exercise civil disobedience today, but they somehow have missed the connection between the act of civil disobedience and the moral obligation to accept the consequences of that behavior in order to put the law on trial. And I just think it's really important that we memorialize that behavior that is so, it is moral and it is what is successful in changing our society because it's so instructive. The next lesson is the time it took to make this change in American society. It was a lifetime of unwavering commitment to the ideal that this was unjust, it was illegal, and eventually that was vindicated. So I think the last thing I really like about this memorial is that it commemorates March 28th, not Minyasui's birthday and not the day of his passing, but the day he strode through the city streets of Portland and put the law on trial. That is worth remembering. So I really appreciate the effort that it took to bring this issue forward, so much so that I've requested to become a sponsor of the bill.
Thank you, Senator.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the honor of your presence.
You are in my sister and brother-in-law. You represent my sister and brother-in-law, and I went to law school with Representative Benz from Ontario.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you. And thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Other comments? Okay. Well, thank you again for your testimony. And next we will call George Nakata and Lily Irinaga, if the two of you would like to come forward. Good afternoon, and welcome to our Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, Senator Farioli, I certainly appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. My name is George Nakata, and I thank the committee for allowing me to share a few comments with you this afternoon. One of the greatest civil rights leaders of all time in U.S. history was Minoru Minyasui. It was back in the year 1942, on March the 28th, at 8 o'clock p.m., that Minoru Yasui started his three-hour walk. He walks against a curfew that singled out the Japanese. He walks because our freedom was getting quite fragile. He walked because our Constitution was carelessly adhered to. He walked against the incarceration of over 120,000 Japanese. Minyasui continued that walk for the rest of his life. I happen to be one of those 120,000 incarcerated. There was no trial, no due process. We were jailed simply because of who we are. My family lost everything, hotel, markets. I remember a small item that was not small to my parents. At that time, radios were not small transistor radios. They were big consoles, pieces of furniture. My mother and father in 1939 purchased one for $100, a lot of money at that time. Evacuation, they sold that same radio for $5 to a policeman on the beat, symbolic of what the first generation lost during the panicking hysteria of World War II. And Minyasui was right there helping Japantown, helping the elder Iseis who spoke very little English. He helped them as they closed their shops, as they then closed their businesses. We were ordered to evacuate with only which we could carry. That was it. My family had a number, 15066. I didn't even have a Social Security number, but I had a family number. And many years later, after university and working, I had friends that would ask me, George, how do you remember that number? You were so young. And my answer is simply, how can I forget? All of us were then herded into the North Portland Livestock Yard. Yes, livestock yard. Pig pens, chicken coops, horse stalls, 3,800 of us behind barbed wires. Our stall was 14 by 14 with four army cots, with a little plastic bag on each army cot, and we were ordered to go into the center where there used to be an arena for horse shows, a big pile of hay, and stuff that hay into the canvas because that was to be our mattress. Pungent odor seeping through the wooden floors. Indeed, it was like living in a barn for 6 months. Suddenly, September of 1942, we're down at the train station. The Union Station, we're boarding trains. Trains to where? Parts unknown. The MPs, the military police, marching up and down the aisles, ordering us to pull down the shades. We were not to see where we were going. The only thing we sensed is the trains were going east. In the middle of the night, the train stops and we deboard, aboard more buses, 19 and a half miles outside of the city of Twin Falls. Under the moonlight, we can see a sea of sagebrush. We can see a sea of army barracks, tar paper barracks. This was Minidoka, desolate, dry, lonely. 9,600 of us there in Minidoka. 44 blocks, each block with 12 barracks, each barrack with six units, a mess hall, a shower stall, a laundry room. We were in block number 34. So was Lily. We happened to be in the same block. Mm-hmm. And at that time, block number 34 did not have the plumbing hooked up. We had no water. It was my job to go up to block 36, get two pails of fresh water twice a day to bring them back so our family could have something to brush their teeth with and drink some fresh water. We lined up for everything. We lined up for the mess hall. We lined up to take a shower. We lined up to do our laundry. I lined up once a week to get our two rolls of toilet paper for our family. And we saw Min Yasui there. He'd just come back from Portland, solitary confinement. He told my father what it was to live there for 9 months. He then moved out after a few months from Minidoka to the Midwest and ultimately settled in Colorado, as Peggy just mentioned. September 1945, the war ends. Back to Portland. But it was a different Portland. There's no more Japantown. We lost everything back in 42. We can barely make it into a housing project in North Portland. It's kind of ironic when I think about that, because at that time, I remember shopping at the Goodwill. Today, we donate to the Goodwill. And I often think about that when I bring something over to the Goodwill. My sister Mary and I went to James John School on North Lombard. We were the first Japanese ever in that school. When I set foot into my homeroom, my teacher hated the Japanese, and she let me know that in a hurry. Every job, whether it's waste paper basket emptying, the erasing the blackboard, something is spilled to wipe it up, 25 students, but I was the one appointed to do that job. I was sitting in the back row. I was looking toward the front of the classroom. A little girl, a fellow student, was opening up her little purse. And in it, she pulled out her little pocket mirror, and she was looking back at me. Apparently, she had not seen anybody of Japanese descent before. 1979, our first day of remembrance. The Japanese of Portland went back out to the livestock yard, to the old Portland Assembly Center, euphemism. Our keynote speaker, Min Yasui, who flew in from Denver. And I shall never forget his moving and powerful words. In 1986 early, I happened to be at a conference in Broadmoor, Colorado. Min Yasui took the trouble of driving down there, and we got together for a short bite to eat. He was already pale with cancer. His parting shot to me was, "George, when you get back to Portland, don't ever stop telling the story of 120,000 Japanese incarcerated." Through all those years, Min Yasui, he was our voice. Yes, my family lost everything. 4 years behind barbed wires. But our hope was that those years were not in vain. You see, in Colorado, in Little Japantown, they have a plaza. It's named the Min Yasui Plaza. They have a bronze statue there for Min Yasui. But how about Oregon? What are we going to do? Min Yasui was an Oregonian through and through. Born here, educated here, brought up here, he became a lawyer here. At his final bequest, he asked that his ashes be sent back to Oregon and be buried in Hood River next to his mother and father. Be that as it may, we all know the Min Yasui walk continues. Even today, his walk for equality marches on. Oregon, we should never ever forget Minoru Min Yasui. Lily.
Senator Rosenbaum, my name is Lily Irinaga, and I feel very privileged for this chance to share with your committee my story about Nisei, which means second generation of Japanese Americans born in the USA. I was born in Portland, Oregon in 1929, an American citizen. So I have been a native Oregonian my entire life, as was my late husband, who was also born in Portland in 1922. Together we grew up, went to school, got engaged, then married, and worked in Portland. We raised our family of four children in Beaverton, Oregon, and my eldest son, Michael, is here with me today in support of this legislation. We are proud Duck fans, because both my husband and I went to the University of Oregon in Eugene. Fred graduated in business from the U of O in the late 1940s as a World War II veteran on the GI Bill. He became a successful entrepreneur and built several businesses, including several car washes, where he worked with his two brothers, Tex and Henry, who were also World War II veterans. The family businesses were able to support three families and help most of the children go to college. I graduated from Merrillhurst College in Lake Oswego and became an elementary teacher at Buckman Grade School in Southeast Portland in the early 50s. I later worked as a special education teacher substitute in the Beaverton School District. Prior to World War II, my father, Toru Kobayashi, and my mother, Sakaya Fujihara, came to Oregon separately as young teenagers with their parents from Japan in the early 1900s. They were called Issei, the first generation Japanese, to immigrate to the United States of America, to this land of freedom and opportunity. My parents decided to stay in America, the country of their choice. My mom went to middle school in Portland, and my dad graduated from Benson High School. They met for the first time in Portland and were married at the old Epworth Methodist Church in the northwest part of town. My dad became a machinist for the Union Pacific Railroad in Portland. Later, he attended the Western College of Chiropractic in Portland in the late 1930s. His chiropractic knowledge came in handy when he taught judo to local men and boys as a black belt judo instructor. Together, they operated the Chester Hotel, my mother and dad, and made beds, and my father did all of the maintenance work. They worked long hours, and we never took vacations, hardly ever. I remember we took occasional car rides with friends to go to picnics because I was young and we didn't own a car. I was happy to go to school at Shattuck Elementary and had great fun playing with many Caucasian and Asian friends. And I really liked playing with my baby Shirley Temple. I had fond memories as a 12-year-old girl walking the late afternoons to the stop in downtown Portland where my father, after his shift was over at the Union Pacific, then he and I would walk home to the Chester Hotel together. Then December 7th, 1941, changed everything. Pearl Harbor and the beginning of World War II with Japan. We were always proud to be Americans, but suddenly the country is overcome, blinded by the hysteria of war. Singling out all people of Japanese heritage, including Japanese American citizens on the West Coast, for incarceration. The U.S. government looked upon us as foreigners, not as Americans, and mistaking us as people loyal to the country of Japan. The U.S. totally forgot. My parents chose America. This is our home. As young adults, my parents had left Japan forever. On the morning of December 7th, we heard on the radio the shocking news about the attack on Pearl Harbor. At the time, we really didn't know what that would mean to us. That same evening, because we had already tickets bought, my parents and I went to a performance of a visiting singing and dancing troupe from Japan at the Norse Hall in Northeast Portland. At the intermission, I remember some official men coming into the hall, which I later found out were from the FBI. They announced over the speaker system the names of a dozen or more Iseis, or the first generation Japanese, including my own dad's name, ordering them to immediately to assemble in the lobby. I ran to see my father, and I saw him, but all the other people and my dad were handcuffed, and they were being scurried out into the night. From that scary night, my mom and I did not see my dad for 2.5 years since that time. Received only edited letters from him. The pages he sent had whole sentences cut out. And he mailed letters from the prison camps and penitentiaries from places like Missoula, Montana, Fort Sill, Oklahoma, Camp Livingston, Louisiana, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Crystal City, Texas. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, through General John DeWitt, ordered all Japanese on the West Coast to abide by many new so-called exclusion orders. Exclusion orders of a curfew, exclusion orders for a pending evacuation. Orders, so many, over 50, and all so restrictive. My parents lost almost everything that they had worked so hard to achieve. We were like other families in a panic. When Executive Order 9066 for evacuation was issued, we were given just days to dispose of everything we owned, from their business to the family furniture, family heirlooms. I remember that we were allowed only to bring a few possessions that we can carry. I sadly remember having to leave my baby Shirley Temple at home because we were not able to put it in my suitcase when Mom and I were forced to leave our home. Then we found ourselves inside a terrible livestock, as George had mentioned, the Portland Assembly Center. Minyasui called it a pig pen. We had no privacy. Each family was cramped into little plywood stalls where we lived and slept. This was a temporary way station located at what is now called the Portland Exposition Center. We were held there for a while. We found out later government was building the 10 interior incarceration or concentration camps, all located in desolate areas where eventually 110,000 to 120,000 Japanese Americans like me would be transported to live. Our next move was to the American concentration that Mom and I, many of our friends from Portland, were assigned to Minidoka, Idaho. From the time we got off the train, I remember the dust was all over the place, dust flying everywhere and into our flimsy barracks. We had to survive. We built walkways and started schools. We didn't have enough desks or tables, so thank goodness the Quakers and the Red Cross were able to send us equipment. We elected a block manager and chief cook for our mess hall. To this day, I remember my address in camp. It was 3412G, and there were 12 barracks in each block, and my grandparents and my great-grandparents were living in the same block as well. My husband's family was also incarcerated in Minidoka. It was here that Fred, a young 21-year-old Nisei, had the courage to become one of the first men to volunteer in 1943 for what would become the storied 442nd Regimental Combat Team. He wanted to show his loyalty to the United States by America by volunteering to fight for his country. Fred was inducted into the U.S. Army at Fort Benning, Georgia. He became a sergeant and part of the cadre. He helped to train soldiers in his unit. Later, he volunteered to become a paratrooper jumping out of planes. I think that's how he got his name, Fearless. After that, he went on to military intelligence school at Fort Snelling, Minnesota, to the language, a Japanese language school located there. Minyasui also had the courage to stand up to unjust incarceration. I've known Min's younger sister, Yuka, since our college days at University of Oregon. Both she and her brother, Dr. Homer Yasui, and his wife, Mickey, have been longtime friends with our family. The removal of my family and the Yasui family and the thousands of other Japanese-American families was a historical mistake of unprecedented magnitude. My parents and their peers were the ones who suffered the most. Unfortunately, they passed on. They never knew that America finally admitted its huge blunder and officially apologized. Through those dark years, Minoru Yasui was the light of hope to our community. He stood up against the mistake of the United States government. I, along with thousands of others, will never forget the loss of freedom, the loss of identity, and the loss of dignity for those years we spent behind barbed wires. I want my four kids, Mike, Chris, Doug, and Todd, and their spouses, and my eight grandchildren and future generations to never forget the lessons of injustice of the incarceration, because what we went through affects all Americans then and now. Ironically, my youngest son is a longtime special FBI agent in California. He was on the team that interrogated Saddam Hussein in Iraq when he was captured. Several years ago, I attended the Congressional Gold Medal event in Washington, D.C., where the 42nd Regimental Combat Team and the 100th Battalion and the Military Intelligence Service were collectively awarded the medal. Each veteran, living in past, was honored for his go-for-broke service, sacrifice and loyalty in fighting for America, even while many of their parents and other family members were in American concentration camps. I have a replica of the Congressional Gold Medal of my late husband, and I would like to show it to you. Then on December 7th, 1941, here we go. Min Yasui never gave up fight for justice, so he should be a beacon of light for all Oregonians and all Americans. We need freedom of justice for Americans of every race, color, ethnic group, age, religion, sex, and lifestyle. Remembering Min Yasui every March 28th is a significant and symbolic reminder that America should never forget. That's what Fred believed, Minya Sui believed, and that's what I believe. Thank you very much for this opportunity to share my story. Thank you.
Well, thank you both for your eloquent testimony. It's really important that we remember these stories, and fitting today that we hear them as part of honoring Minya Sui. Okay, well, next I will call Pam Cannaday and Chris Emerson. The two of you would like to come forward. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Pamela Ondo Cannaday. I am a proud American, a proud Oregonian residing in Yamhill County, and a proud descendant of the Yasui family. Everything you've heard today about Minoru Yasui is true, but I also want you to know about the Uncle Min I knew. Min was a compassionate, kind, and gentle soul who cared deeply about family. After the war, Min and my father opened a law office together in downtown Denver, but they opened it on Larimer Street, which was considered sort of the skid row at the time. But it was a place that they thought their Japanese clients would not feel as intimidated. Min and my father wanted to be sure that they were accessible to anyone who needed access to legal counsel. My mother, Michi Yasui, always spoke highly of her older brother's fortitude, but as a child, I was more interested in his physical power. The minute he walked in the door, my sisters and I, and there were five girls in the family, we'd pounce on him and ask him to swing us upside down. He always made time for us. As a college student, when I was in Asian American studies and needed to conduct an interview, I called up my Uncle Min and asked him if we could come. He scheduled time in his busy schedule to speak with us. He shared his story that he's told numerous times, but what impressed me most was he told it with such conviction to me as if he was testifying before a Senate hearing. He never missed an opportunity to educate young or old. As a third-generation Japanese-American, I grew up hearing stories of the internment camps, and I thought I understood. However, it wasn't until the death of my mother, Minoru's sister, 10 years ago, that I realized how much the treatment of the Japanese-Americans during the war totally altered their life. My mother, during her last few days, asked the family to gather around her bed. We thought she was going to share warm memories of family stories, but instead, she only spoke of the sadness that they all endured during the war years, because they were looked upon as being the enemy, when in fact they were all loyal Americans. By declaring a Min Yasui Day, you would be creating an important legacy, not only for Asian Americans, who are also an integral part of Oregon history, but for all individuals who have made personal sacrifice in order to protect and preserve the sacred rights that we all share as Americans. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, thank you so much for having all of us here today and allowing us to speak. My name is Chris Emerson. Minoru Yasui was my great uncle. He was also my godfather, and he was a truly heroic and beloved person in my life. He was a frequent visitor to our home. I grew up in Berkeley, California, where I often heard Uncle Min's name brought up by law students, professors, community leaders, activists, Peggy, Usually, he was discussed in the context of civil rights and the U.S. Constitution and the World War II mass incarceration of loyal American citizens of Japanese ancestry. And it gave me a great sense of pride that this man was my great-uncle. Tomorrow's February 19th, which is the anniversary of the signing of Executive Order 9066, which allowed the Secretary of War to establish military zones on the West Coast. And when the curfew was imposed, and Min, a graduate of the U of O Law School, took it upon himself to test it, he turned himself over to police in Portland, where he was arrested. And between the time of his arrest and the end of that year that he served in Multnomah County Jail, his family was relocated to Tule Lake Internment Center, along with thousands of other Japanese Americans. They were moved for no crime other than looking like the enemy. They were forced to leave their family homes, their businesses, their friends, and they were herded off to camps with only what they could carry. And this is where my mother, Joan Yasui, was born. So last summer, I had the opportunity to take my 8-year-old daughter, Amanda, down to Tule Lake to see where her grandmother was born and spent the first few years of her life. And she was shocked. She stared through the chain-link fences at the remaining tar paper barracks in the unforgiving California desert, if anybody's been down to Tule Lake. I witnessed the moment that racial prejudice and injustice was allowed to enter my daughter's innocent world. And sadly, she turned to me and she asked, "Dad, didn't anybody stand up for us? Didn't anybody care?" And I told her of all the good people who did care, and I told her about my Uncle Min and his long and difficult fight for justice and dignity for her and for generations to come. And I took her to school this morning, at a school that Min also attended in Hood River. And I thought to myself, how different of a place this would have been had it not been for the efforts of my great uncle. And I would be proud to have Oregon designate a day that we could celebrate the life and the work of Minoru Yasui.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both for being here and for your great testimony.
Thank you.
And I think, shall we call all three of our remaining witnesses? So for our last panel, we'll call Mira Olson, Alejandro Morales, and also Mari Watanabe. The three of you would like to come forward. Welcome to our Senate Rules Committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Alejandro Morales. I'm a 7th grade student at Hood River Middle School. Last year in 6th grade Oregon history class, we learned about diverse groups of people moving all over the world to Oregon. This includes Japanese Americans, especially those in the Hood River, before, during, after World War II. When local community member Maya Yasui guest spoke in our classroom, we learned about discrimination and the unjust treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II. However, in this history, we found a hero. Responding to the bombing of Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066 and took away many Japanese American freedoms. Our hero, Minoru Yasui, by using deep thinking and intentional action, challenged these injustices. On March 28, 1942, Min walked the streets of Portland after curfew to be arrested and began judicial testing of the constitutionality of rights taken away from United States citizens. Minoru Yasui, born in Hood River, was a first-generation birthright citizen. I was also born in Hood River and am a first-generation United States birthright citizen, and I am here today as an active citizen. Kids are our country's future decision-makers. Through Minoru Yasui's story, we learned history, thought about his life dedicated to social justice, and are now inspired to be an active citizen. All kids in Oregon need to know about, celebrate, and be inspired by Minoru Yasui's dedicated lifetime to social justice. By permanently establishing March 28, Minoru Yasui Day, you are ensuring the future generations will now know one of the greatest humans and civil rights leaders in the United States history is an Oregonian. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Mira Tyra Olson. I'm also currently a 7th grade student at Hood River Middle School, and also here today to speak in support of House Bill 4009 and permanently establishing March 28th Menoria Sui Day in Oregon. We began this project nearly 14 months ago by asking ourselves, what is a hero? In hopes of finding a local Hood River individual to research and celebrate. We discovered Menoria Sui. Born on October 19th, 1916 in Hood River, Min was a Nisei, or second-generation Japanese-American. He grew up in Hood River and graduated from Hood River High School in 1933. This is the same building that we now attend as Hood River Middle School. As the first Japanese-American to graduate from law school at the University of Oregon, he dedicated his life to the rule of law. On March 28, 1942, Menoria Sui broke Executive Orders 9066's racially-based curfew against Japanese-American citizens by walking the streets of Portland to be arrested. His secretary called the police to find and arrest him. When Mr. Yasui approached an officer on the street, he refused to take him into custody, so Mr. Yasui walked to Portland Police Department and demanded to be arrested. It's like he actually had to try to get arrested. After his trial, he spent 9 months in jail, followed by incarceration with Japanese-Americans in Idaho's Minidoka Relocation Center. The Supreme Court ruled against Min and the Constitution, stating it a wartime necessity. Sometimes kids, adults, and government are wrong, and sometimes we need to right these wrongs. In the last 14 months, our Oregon history class has been voicing our belief that Menoria Sui is a hero and deserves to be recognized. We began by writing a letter, which turned into a video letter to President Obama, in support of honoring Menoria Sui with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. We have since spoken at community events about his leadership, and we are now testifying to the Oregon legislature. With thoughtful and intentional civic action, we continue to be inspired by Menoria Sui. As the next generation, it is our responsibility to be civically involved. Establishing March 28th, Menoria Sui Day in Oregon, will honor one of the greatest civil and human rights heroes in Oregon and United States history, while he will also serve as a role model for future generations like us. Thank you.
Great. Thank you both for your excellent testimony.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, I'm Mari Watanabe. I am the chair of the Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs, also known as OCAPIA. It's a pleasure to be here today to testify in support of HB 4009. As the chair of the commission, as a member of the Menoria Sui Presidential Medal of Freedom Committee, and as a third-generation Japanese American, my family endured civil rights abuses like Min during World War II. Like Min's father, both of my grandfathers were taken away by the FBI for reasons unknown. One of my grandfathers was shipped off to a Department of Justice camp in Montana, again, for reasons unknown, for many, many weeks. My extended family of grandmothers, aunts, uncles, etc., were all incarcerated for many years in camps in Oregon and in California. Their story and the story of Menoria Sui, a civil rights hero, is seldom taught in our history classes. Declaring March 20th Menoria Sui Day is an opportunity to educate many Oregonians on the legacy of Min and other Japanese Americans about their contributions to ensuring that civil rights are extended to all Oregonians. 2 years ago, OCAPIA supported Senate Bill 739, in which Senator Jackie Winters, all of you on this committee, and many others supported. This bill directs the Oregon Department of Education to include a balanced presentation of the relevant contributions by society of men and women of all racial groups in Oregon. OCAPIA and our fellow advocacy commissions were specifically called out in this bill to be a consultant for the Oregon Department of Education. I believe that the passage of HB 4009 will inspire great curriculum that will support Senate Bill 739 by telling the story of Min and Japanese Americans all over Oregon. It was a proud day for myself, Min's family, friends, and the Grassroots Nominating Committee when President Barack Obama awarded Minoru Yasui the Presidential Medal of Freedom, saying, quote, "It is a call to our national conscience, a reminder of our enduring obligation to be the land of the free and the home of the brave, America worthy of his sacrifices," unquote. The legacy of social and civil disobedience that includes Japanese Americans is a keystone to Oregon's great history. Japanese Americans have made considerable contributions to this state despite having endured many civil rights abuses. The Oregon Commission on Asian and Pacific Islander Affairs joins in solidarity with the many other civil rights heroes in Oregon's past and the Japanese American community to celebrate the legacy of Minoru Yasui. We encourage you to positively consider HB 4009. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks especially Alejandro and Mira for being here today and for playing a part in having such this Oregonian would have been a hero no matter what, but especially the role that you played in his getting awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That must be quite a conclusion to a class project that not very many kids could be able to add that to the work that you did. So you should be very proud of the part that you played, and thanks for being here today to tell us about it. Okay, thank you very much. And I see that we've been joined by Representatives Clem and Johnson. So we are would love to hear from you if you wanted to testify as our last witnesses. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you. Chair and committee members, for the record, I'm Mark Johnson, House District 52, and I've been privileged to grow up in the Hood River Valley. Grew up in the little town of Parkdale, right at the base of Mount Hood, there on the south end of the Hood River Valley, and in doing so, I've had the opportunity to have a front row seat, I think, to kind of witness what I would characterize as the legacy, the enduring legacy of Min Yasui, and how his life truly transformed not just a few, but I think the entire culture in the valley. I grew up just like most kids in an American town with kids whose friends whose names were Donald and Douglas and Sandra and Terry and so forth, but their last names were Hamada and Kiyokawa and Kanoshita and Yasui, and that was normal. There was nothing abnormal about that, and we grew up all together red-blooded American kids. But I never ever knew from growing up with these kids what their parents had endured. They didn't wear it on their heart sleeve, you know, their shirt sleeves. They didn't walk around, you know, reflecting bitterness and strife. They were just, they didn't wear that because they had, I think, learned that through the life of Min and how he encountered, you know, the injustice that was enacted upon him, that you work within the system, you work hard, you try to change the system, and where there's injustice, you stand up and say, no, I have rights as an American citizen, which he did. So I point that out because I think as you look around our country and you look in other parts of the world where there has been injustice, but yet they've never gotten over it. They've never gotten past that. And to this day, you continue to have divisions and strife and disagreements that can continue to characterize locations. We never had that in Hunter Valley. I've always had a warm spot in my heart for my Japanese American friends. They're just wonderful people, and I've learned a lot in my own life just by being able to be in the same community with them. So that, for me, is the essence of what this honor really, really is, and it will be a true honor if we can declare this day. You know, this will be a focal point for the whole entire Hood River community to say that, you know, we've had our chance, and we've taken a stand. We've made ourselves better in the midst of some very difficult situations. So I'm very honored to be able to play a role in this process, and I would certainly encourage your support of this resolution. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair Rosenbaum and committee, Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26. I, like Mark, myself,
live and have resided in Hood River all my life. Mark and I were in the same class growing up, went to the same schools once we got to middle school, and so we have all the same friends too. And I saw that, and I have many, many Japanese friends and neighbors. I'm a pear grower there. There's several pear-growing Japanese-American families. To me, and like Mark is saying, it wasn't Japanese-Americans. They were just our friends and neighbors. And I want to thank Representative Clem for making this bill possible at the late stage that this came to us. He did a great job getting this through, and we started our first day of the session honoring Minoru in the Senate and the House, and we're halfway through, and I think we're going to get this finished up. I hope we get this bill finished up. This is a great. This bill is a great honor to the Minoru Yasui family and the whole Yasui family. It's a great honor for Hood River. You know, we're very proud of Min and his, what he accomplished, and this will be a great honor for Hood River when this bill passes and for the state of Oregon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brian Clem, and I represent the district we're in now. It's called 21 in Salem. I would have loved to have grown up in Hood River like my wife did, but I just sort of married into it by luck and found what a wonderful community it is. Along with Representative Gilliam, we were able, fortunate enough to get to introduce this bill in the House as one of our personal bills, and pleased to hear it in the committee I chair, Rural Communities, partially because Min came from rural Oregon, and I think that gave him a certain stubbornness of character. Is this book about the Yasui family called Stubborn Twig. It talks about the whole family, and I guess the only thing I wanted to point out is he was 25 years old when Pearl Harbor happened, and his father was arrested the next Friday, just a few days later, gone. No idea where he was taken, just whisked away by the FBI. And so imagine a 25-year-old kid deciding, I'm going to challenge Franklin Delano Roosevelt's executive order, the entire U.S. military, the Portland police. My dad's gone somewhere. I have no idea where they took him. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to challenge the President of the United States and walk down that street and get arrested, go to solitary confinement for 9 months. That's bravery. I can't even imagine at age 25 even thinking about questioning that level of authority. And I think George Nakata is here, and he probably told you, I don't think it, I could not personalize what Carol's dad went through until George told his story to our committee when he talked about going into a pig pen, a cattle car in Portland, and having to stuff his own mattress with straw in a canvas bag, and that's your home for the next several months. And like, I don't think I could figure out, even though I'm married to someone whose family was interned, I don't think I could have been walked through by them because they didn't like to talk about it much, what it would have felt like. There's your duffel bag, stuff it with straw, that's where you're staying. So I think that courage that he showed is significant, and a lot of important groups did not support him. He did this largely on his own for quite a long time. Even the Japanese American Citizens League was nervous about he as a test case because as they worried, he himself worried, I'm not from the military, I don't have cute kids, I'm not sure I'm the right test case. I'm the first lawyer, I'm single, maybe stubborn, not sure I'm in the right test case, but he did it on his own. And this is a little paper. It's got the Suzuki family number, 16287, Hideo's ID number 299. Rule number two, this is you were assigned to barrack number B4, apartment unit 3, and these were cattle cars. During your stay, the above is your permanent address. Number two, you will not move from the above address without your permission. These are U.S. citizens born here. No relationship to Japan. Min resigned the day after Pearl Harbor from his not really high-level government job in the Japanese embassy, but he was doing some translating, and tried to enlist to go fight immediately. And the train ticket salesperson wouldn't even sell him a train ticket to go and report because he was already an ROTC reservist ready to go, and they wouldn't sell him a train ticket because he was ready to go fight. And that's the kind of courage that then he led for many, many years. Not just, the legal case went on for a long time, as you probably heard. So it's an important story. Obviously, it's important that he's the first Oregonian to ever get the Medal of Freedom, but it's an important story for all of us to think about every single March 28th, and that's the beauty of the bill. It's just every year we can have this talk, students can have this talk, and I just think it's a wonderful project of the ACLU and JACL and the Yasui family, and I hope you're pleasantly in support, but I don't know how the conversation went.
Okay, well, thank you to our colleagues for bringing this to us, and thank you to everybody who testified so eloquently and everybody who worked to make this happen. It seems like a very fitting tribute to a great Oregonian and a great American, and the least we can do here to pass this and create Minyasui Day in Oregon, which we'll be able to celebrate the first one in March. So, okay. Any comments or questions, colleagues?
Madam Chair, Mrs. Irinaga mentioned the 442, the most decorated unit in World War II. Mm-hmm. So if folks haven't taken the time to study the history of the 442, it is unprecedented in American military history. So it is another lesson of courage and will and loyalty. It's also inspiring. Thank you, Madam Chair. I offer that comment because I know our good colleague, Senator Boquist, would offer that comment if we were here on the dais.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think that completes our public testimony. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4009 and open a work session on House Bill 4009. Vice Chair Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gives me great pleasure to move House Bill 4009 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 4009 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And Senator Thompson, would you be our carrier on the floor? Great. We'll have Senator Thompson carry on the floor. Thank you again to everybody who was here today. And if you want to be here the day that we hear this on the floor of the Senate, our capable committee administrator, Aaron Seiler, will be happy to take your information and let you know when we have it scheduled. Okay, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 4009. And committee members, thank you. We are adjourned for today.
Sending the others.
Nope.
Sending the others.
Nope.
Adjourned for today.